Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your way. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Yeah, thank you. And strap yourself in, everybody. We are going on a bush plane ride the next 60 minutes. No kidding. We are. We're going up in bush planes, and you're going to enjoy. We have an exciting program. We have not one, but two former bush flyers with us here tonight, and we're going to talk about what it's like to do that exciting work. And we welcome you to join us tonight. If you have a question for any of our guests, we have a toll-free statewide number that you can call. And what's that number, Scotty?
1-800-966-1039.
All right. You did that with such a plum.
Oh, yes.
Very good. we'll introduce our two guests in just a minute, but first, the crew that make this show possible every week. And by the way, our esteemed co-host, Robert F. Lehman, is slightly under the weather. He's going to be okay, but he didn't quite feel up to coming in to do the show tonight. So we have a mystery co-host we'll introduce in just a moment. We wish Bob well, hope he recovers, and hope to see him with us right here before the microphones next week. The man behind the gauges and dials in there in Studio B, behind the bulletproof glass, is a fellow that's been known as the sweetheart of Grand Lake Stream, Mr. Norm. Mr. Norm Plord. Take a bow, Norm.
Good evening. How do you like this weather? I love it.
Isn't it gorgeous? Yeah. I mean, what a fantastic day.
The garden's growing like crazy.
Oh, and, our garden is just going great guns. Mm. Things are great. Beautiful summer so far. Okay, Bob is not with us, and I introduced Norm Plord. Nobody else in there with you, right?
No, nobody behind the chair.
All alone there. That's a new experience being there alone. Tonight, filling in for Bob Lehman is our esteemed number two engineer, Mr. Scotty Bates, who I had to just drag him in here kicking and screaming, but he's going to do a great job. Scotty, welcome to the big seat.
I get to sit on the easy side of the glass tonight.
Yes, you do. You don't have to do anything but shoot your mouth off,
Our chief engineer was going to be here, but he's a little under the weather, too, so he'll try to be here next week.
Right. Well, I haven't seen Jim for quite a while. We miss him. Hope he makes it next week. And our major guest, our studio guest we invited to join us tonight, has been on our program in the past. He's a retired bush pilot. He used to fly for Dick Folsom. He flew for himself. He ran sporting camps. And he did one book called Hardscrabble Lodge, which is about running a sporting camp and also all the thrills and spills of bush flying. And he has another number two book we're going to talk about tonight. We'd like to welcome Jake Morrill.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here, Jake.
Thanks.
And Jake, you're a prolific guy. You've not only just finished the second book, you're working on your third book. We're having trouble keeping up with you, guy.
Well, when you've got good people to write about, it's easy.
You betcha. You have good topics. Anyway, we'll be talking now. Scotty Bates, for those of you who may not know, not only is he a talented bass player, musician, artist, he is also a former bush flyer who once worked for Dick Folsom.
Yeah.
And Jake Morrill's new book is called Dick Folsom, Bush Pilot, A Legend Reflects. And it's a fantastic book with some great interviews with the late Dick Folsom, who was Maine's iconic bush flyer. And anybody who spent any time, I guess, in the outdoors has probably heard the name Dick Folsom. And Jake has a new book, and we're going to talk about that in just a minute. Again, if you want to be on our program tonight, we have a toll-free statewide number, and you're listening to us on WVOM-FM, which is 103.9. You may be listening to us on 101.3 down in Rockland, right?
Rockland's 1450 AM.
Why can't I get that straightened out?
101.3 is Augusta.
Oh, Augusta, okay. Anyway, it's the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, and everybody who is listening tonight, we welcome you, and we hope you will participate on the program if you have anything to contribute, and I know you do. Right now, though, it's time for Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal, Scotty Bates' favorite publication.
Sure is.
And let's see, I want to remind you that if you'd like to pick up a su- subscription to the Sporting Journal. You can do so by calling Alicia during the week, during normal working hours. And the number there at the Sporting Journal office in Enfield on the old County Road is 732-4880. And if you pick it up at the newsstand, we appreciate that patronage, but you can save yourself a bundle of money if you get yourself a mail subscription, and we'll deliver it right to your home. 732-4880 is the number, and you can call Alicia anytime during the week. Just a couple of highlights here from the Outdoor Digest. Apparently, the Maine Warden Service this week has been really busy. There has been a rash of hikers on the Appalachian Trail getting in some in different sorts of trouble. They had a 21-year-old gal who had some problems on the trail, complaining of severe nausea, and the wardens had to go in from the Greenville area and rescue her. And then there was a fellow on the AT, a 67-year-old man, suffering from heat exhaustion. So the game wardens just want to remind everybody, you know, that's a big deal to get on the Appalachian Trail. You want to be in shape. You want to be prepared. You have the right gear, the right food and water and so forth. Have a plan. Make sure you tell somebody where you're going. And I think a lot of people today don't take the quite precautions because they feel safe because they've got that little iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
If they get in trouble, they can just call the game warden.
Yeah, but still a long ways from anywhere.
That's right. So if you're going to hike on the Appalachian Trail, you're going to hike anywhere. Be prepared. And this puts a real stress on the warden service. They have to go in and rescue people. If you've ever carried a bag of potatoes, you know what it might be like to try to carry somebody on one of those little stretchers for 5 or 6 miles over rocks and rough terrain. So it's not an easy thing to do, and game wardens don't like to do it unless they absolutely have to. And so they want to remind everybody, be safe, use your head if you're out there hiking, and make sure you're well prepared. Any deer permits are now available online. If you'd like to take a chance on getting a doe permit in the state of Maine, you can go to the IFNW website. They're now available and will be online only. There are no hard copies being mailed out anymore. You've got to do it online, and you have until August 15th to submit your application for the Any Deer Lottery. And let's see, also... That's not the right music, Maestro.
Where
did
that come
from? Oh, you had.
I forgot. That's Jim's music.
Oh, whoops. Well, yeah, you going to sing or hum a little bit there?
How about this?
Well, and the big boss, Bass, isn't here tonight.
No, where is he? Oh, where are you, Bobby?
He's playing hooky.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well. Yeah. And you work for me. All right. You know, I can just picture Bob Lehman dancing around his living room during the Red Sox game. He loves that. Bob loves that song. He used to, you know, Bob used to, when he was a youngster, he took dancing, ballroom dancing lessons.
I can see
no,
Bob.
Tap dancing. He was a tap dancer like Fred Astaire.
Wow.
And in fact, at 80-some years old, Diane says, that man is so light on his feet.
She says,
I'm amazed how light. And Bob says he attributes all to his dancing lessons way back when he was 12 years old.
Wow.
Anyway, we digress. fishing, I just have a couple of things here. I haven't really had a chance to fish much since the Big Eddie trip a couple of weeks ago. But at my lake where I live, green drakes are out. And I don't think I've ever seen such a prolific hatch of green drakes as I've seen at Branch Lake. So I'm sort of guessing, but extrapolating? I think if you up north in some of those little trout ponds, it's not too late. We're into July, but I would say in the evenings, if the green drakes are anything like they are where I live, you might get some good trout fishing up north. So I'd give it a shot. If you're a trout fisherman, don't hang it up yet. I think there's still an opportunity there. Those green drakes, of course, are mainstay forage for those brookies. So keep that in consideration. The only other thing I know fishing-wise is that the stripers are in. I'm getting reports from different folks, particularly down in southern Maine, that the striper fishing has been pretty darn good. So if you're a striper angler, this is the time to take advantage of that. Do you folks have anything Outdoor Digest-wise?
Not really.
No, it's been so hot, I've stayed indoors most of the week.
Yeah, it was
the
warm.
The air conditioning.
It was warm, but it's
but I love it.
Certainly nicer today. Okay, that wraps up the Outdoor Digest brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. And we're going to be talking to our guest, Jake Morrill, in just a second. But first, we have a trivia question to dispose of. And this is the first of the month, and that's good news for you, the listener. That means that we are going to give you a subscription to the Northwood Journal worth about $30. If you know the answer to the question that co-host Scotty Bates is going to put on you right now.
Yes, and the question has to do with fly fishing. And it's, why is it important to match the size of the triplet to the size of the fly?
Oh, that's a tippet.
Tippet.
All right, okay.
Not triplet, tippet.
Yeah.
Okay, again, why is it important to match the size of the tippet to the size of the fly?
All right, 1-800-966-1039, you ponder that, and we shall return. Okay, if you just joined us, again, we're strapping in, and we're going flying with a couple of bush pilots, Maine bush pilots here on Maine Outdoors, and we'll be with them in just a minute. First, the trivia question. Scotty Bates, our acting co-host, wants you to tell him why it is important to match the size of the tippet on your fly line to the size of the fly. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors.
We have Hunter from Lisbon Falls.
Okay. Mr. Hunter from Lisbon Falls, go ahead.
Is it to make sure the fly is heavier than tippet?
Okay. Why is that? Why would you want the fly to be heavier?
So you can cast.
Okay. I think that's probably a good answer, right? You're not a fly fisherman, right?
Well, no.
You're going to recuse yourself as a judge? I think that's a good answer. Okay. I mean, the answer we have written down here, we pay, of course, a consulting firm to write all these high-priced questions, but smoother presentation on the water is what we're looking for. You want that fly to kind of just tumble down like a natural fly, right? Isn't that right, Norm Plord?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Would you give it to him?
I would.
Okay, you've just won
it. Presentation. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Good answer. Yeah, that's a correct answer. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. Are you a fly fisherman?
No, I'm not.
Well, how'd you know that then?
That's about it.
Okay. Well, okay. Congratulations to you. Where are you calling us from, Hunter?
Right now, up north in Corinna.
Oh, northern Corinna. That's not too far away. All right, good.
In Brisbane, though.
Okay. If you'll stay on the line, Norm will get your address, and I'll make sure you get signed up Monday for a subscription, all right?
Awesome.
Okay. Appreciate you listening, and you stay on the line, okay?
Appreciate you giving it to me.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you. Okay. That's the correct answer. Smoother presentation upon the water. All right. Let's get down to business here. Again, our guest is Jake Morrill, who's written two books, working on his third. First book was called Hardscrabble Lodge, and we had him on the program. How long ago was that? Was that a year ago?
I don't think quite. It's been several months, though.
Several months. Before we talk about your book, tell our listeners who may not know you as well as we do a little bit about your background, Jake, and how you happened to come to write these books, would you?
Well, I was living in Hinckley when I first got interested in flying. There was a grass strip across the river. They used to call it Poverty Flats, 20 old planes there. And I went over a few nights and decided it was something I wanted to do. So I bought a 1941 Tailorcraft, started to take lessons, and make a long story short, I flew about every evening. And then when the winter came, we'd put that on skis, and I'd come up north to Eagle Lake and so forth, pass through Greenville for fuel, and that's how I met Dick. And then I had a chance to buy three wreck floats and make a set of floats for that airplane. So then I started to fly on floats. And eventually Dick gave me a job after I had an instructor's rating. So that's how I ended up working for Dick.
Okay. And the first book, Hardscrabble Lodge, was about your bush flying experiences as an operator of a lodge, right?
Right. After I flew for Dick, I saw a lot of remote lodges, and my wife and I thought it'd be a great place to raise kids and to have our own business. So we fixed up a derelict set of buildings and started Hardscrabble Lodge, and we did that for quite a few years until the roads came into that country.
Yeah, that's really how it all changed, didn't it? I mean,
changed completely.
Back when Dick Folsom was starting his building his business, we didn't have all the road systems we have, so you know, everybody had to fly to get in a lot of those places, right?
Oh, that's yeah. Correct. So, you know, Dick told me many times when he helped fly the folks that laid out the Golden Road that he knew it was the end.
Oh, he did. He knew that he was helping.
You know, he was making a lot of money out of it, but he also knew that it was the beginning of the end of bush flying.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Kept probably kind of a sad thing for folks like him and you. And,
well, it is. And then when Scott Paper put in the Capitol Road West, I watched it progress every day, a quarter of a mile. I knew when it got to the lodge, our business was done.
Yeah. It's kind of a sad thing, but it had to happen, I guess.
Yeah, it did.
Industrial logging. Yeah. Okay. And just so the listeners will know this, not only did Jake here work for Dick Folsom, but also our engineer and our acting co-host tonight, Scotty Bates, worked for Dick. How long did you work for Dick, Scotty?
I worked for Dick 3 summers. One summer, and then I went on full-time for 2 summers before I went to the Forest Service.
Okay. And I've never asked you this question, but how did you build up your hours in order to allow yourself to do that?
Just flying whenever I could. When I was young, I started flying, and I'd be waiting in the morning for it to get daylight enough to put some hours in before I went to work. And
okay, so you had your own plane back?
Had my own plane way back.
Yeah, what did you have for an airplane?
I had a 1938 J-3.
A J-3?
Yeah, but it was a 16th one built.
Oh, no
It was
kidding.
A real early model.
Yeah, yeah. What was your first airplane?
41 Taylorcraft.
Taylorcraft, yeah. They're popular, Taylorcraft. Okay, Dick Folsom. I think I met him one time. In fact, I think Dick Folsom flew my son and I into Horseshoe Pond one time. That's the only time I ever met him. But because I was an outdoor lover and I knew it, I'd heard, I was an aspiring bush pilot. I never did become one, but I did get a license. But anyway, I knew who Dick Folsom was, and he was respected and admired by many, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely.
And what was it like to work for Dick Folsom?
Well, Scotty can tell his story. What I remember is how busy it was. The flying's all condensed into a few months in the summer, and you're literally starting to fly as soon as it's light, and when you come home, it's usually pretty dark.
So and long days and long hours,
long days,
right?
And the reason is that was in the 70s, and the budworm project was on then, so you had all the budworm flying. We were giving probably 30 seaplane ratings a year. In addition to that, the canoe trade running down the St. John and the Allegash was very busy. And then you combine that with all the people that are flying into the sporting camps, plus work you're doing for paper companies and that kind of thing. And I think there were 6 pilots on at the time, and you're just going steady.
And you mentioned the spruce budworm. I remember that era. What were you guys doing? How were you involved with the spruce budworm?
Well, personally, what I did a lot was fly the entomologists around taking samples of the upper branches to track the budworm. And that was, we did a lot of flying. We had planes contracted to the budworm to fly all types of observers around doing various things in both Maine and Canada.
I have some vague recollection of being on a trout pond way up north, almost to the Canadian border, and having a DC-3 spraying something back way back in a spruce budworm. Were you guys involved in that at all?
I was quite a bit.
The DC-3?
Not the DC-3.
Wasn't a DC-3, I think.
It was a DC-4.
DC-4, okay.
Had a bunch of those contracted.
But Dick Folsom didn't have any airplanes like that.
No, but he contracted the little planes. For the monitors, and I was one of the monitors for the state at that time, and I think Dick had the contract to provide 15 or 20 airplanes that year that he provided.
It was very busy.
So when you say monitor, you were looking for spruce budworm destruction?
No, we were watching the spraying to make sure they were spraying the way they were supposed to and that the chemical was going where it was supposed to and not where it...
Oh, I see. And so the state was paying him to keep an eye on the...
No, he provided the airplanes.
Oh, okay.
And the Forest Service, we had a bunch of pilots come in, was contracted. And Harold Jones and I were the first two that started the monitoring program. So we were kind of looking after these pilots.
Okay. And Dick Folsom, what kind of a guy was he to work for, Jake?
I don't think you could invent a better boss.
And why was he a good boss?
Well, he was friendly. As I said, we worked for him just as hard as we could, but by the same token, he constantly took us out to supper at his island and that kind of thing. He just was a great, friendly guy. Plus, he knew so much about engines and flying that all it took is one sentence and he could save your life, because he'd give you a very important tip that you'd never forget.
Well, let's say when you first, either one of you, both of you could answer the question, it would be great, but when you first worked for Dick, did he give you any lectures about safety? I mean, what was his attitude like? I'm trying to get a picture of the guy.
Well, he was safety conscious, but you just knew, you know, the type of job that you had to be safe all the time. And
did he ever chew your butt for doing something unsafe or wrong?
No, because usually if you'd made a mistake, he wouldn't like it, but he'd say, you know, I've done a lot worse. And he usually had.
Right?
He had so much experience. Yeah. That.
So he was an enjoyable guy to work for.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Most fun job I've ever had was working for Dick.
Did he give either of you flying instructions?
No. The only thing he would ever do is the first time you went in an airplane, he might fly with you. But actually, Charlie Coe did as much of that as anyone.
Okay. We got a couple of minutes here before the break. I wanted to remind you, too, that at 7, after the 7:30 break, we'll have a short conversation with Larry Belchin, I think his name is pronounced. He's the coordinator of a big event down in Columbia put on by the Pleasant River Fish and Game Club, and we'll give him a chance to promote that. What's the scariest thing ever happened to you in a bush plane, Jake?
Well, there were a lot of things happened that I didn't like, but probably the one time that I was concerned, as Dick would say, was I took off from Greenville and the plane quit dead at about 500 feet, and I had passengers. So I landed on the lake. That wasn't an instant, but when I got out on the floats, there was a ball of fire in the engine compartment.
Oh, boy.
So the temperature of the water is probably 40 degrees. I've got three people standing on the float. So
and you're a fire.
So I grabbed the fire extinguisher, figuring it would be completely empty. But it wasn't. We put out the fire, and then boats got us. But when you're standing next to cold water and you got a fire right next to you, I didn't like that very much.
No, I don't think so. All right, you stay with us. We'll have more. We'll be right back.
Outdoors next on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, 95.1 Rockland, the voice of Maine.
Okay, we're about, 3,000 feet now, Mr. Engineer, right? Throttle about back, there. And we're going to talk to our bush flyers here in just a minute, but we want to talk to Larry. Did I pronounce your name right? Larry Belchin, is that right, Larry?
It's Belchin, yep.
Belchin. Nice to have you with us, Larry. You're with the Pleasant River Fish and Game Club down there in Columbia, right?
That's correct, yep.
Yep. We want to give you a chance to on the air here to promote your the hoedown you're having. Tell us all about that, would you?
Well, this is the fourth annual Parker Brush Primitive Gathering, and the focus of the event is primitive outdoor skills, traditional archery, bushcraft and survival, things of that nature. And it's a three-day thing. Opens on Friday the 20th at noon. It's $20 for the whole weekend with free camping. We've got meals available on site. 14 and under are free, so it's a great family event. Chem-free and pet-free and that type of thing. So, you know, it's safe. Good place to bring your kids.
Okay, it sounds like you got a lot of things on the plate there. You've got bow making, primitive pottery, fire making, tracking, backwoods rigging, lifting, knot tying, blacksmithing, canoe poling. Wow, a lot going on there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can come and you can watch, or we really encourage people to participate. Last year, Stim Wilcox with his bow making workshop, we had 21 people walk away from that event with a working bow that they made themselves.
Okay.
We've got Doug Wilson from the Haystack School, very famous blacksmith. He'll be up there running programs. The Maine Primitive Skills School from Augusta will be up there running tracking school courses, and just a ton more. It's a very busy weekend.
Yeah, sounds great. Now, for somebody who's not familiar with the Columbia area, and you're coming from, Ellsworth, how would they find you?
Well, the Four Corners is kind of the landmark of the area. So you drive through there, and there's a flashing light and a bank and several stores and such. And probably about a mile and a half beyond that, there's a left. That's the Epping Road. You would turn left on the Epping Road, go 2.5 miles. make a right on Meeting House Road, go a quarter of a mile down the hill, over the bridge. First right is Tibbetstown Road, and we're the first driveway on the right. We got a red building that's on top of the hill. If you get lost, anybody in the area will know where we are.
Okay, so and you have free camping. Does that mean, like, this is hardside campers or tenters or what?
It's primitive camping. We do welcome people to bring campers if they like, but it's basically tenting and that type of thing.
I see.
So there's no hookups or anything like that.
Yeah. Is this some kind of a fundraiser?
We're just doing it to make a little bit of money for the club. We're not doing it as a specific fundraiser, although we do that for a lot of our community service things like our scholarship programs and such.
Okay.
So we do try to make some money at it, definitely.
Okay, and you have a website. If somebody wants to look into it further, it's Puckerbrush. Is that right?
Puckerbrush at prfgca.org. That's my email address. And you can go to the club website is www.prfgca.org. And when they get to our website, there's a tab on the top that says events. They click on that. There's a drop down, and they'll see the Puckerbrush there.
Okay. One thing here caught my attention in your printout. What the heck is the annual Down East Mosquito Swatting Championship?
Oh, well, that's a new event for this one here. And what we've got is you get like a 3-foot square to stand in, and in 5 minutes, the person who can swat the most mosquitoes is the winner. We haven't come up with a prize yet, and I have to admit I stole that idea from the Finns. I guess that's what long winters will do for you.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Well, you know, where I live on a lake, we had terrible mosquitoes. I think the heat killed them all off. I hope that doesn't put a kibosh to your
No. I mean, gee whiz, you know, that's going to be drawing tourists to this area after this gets out.
There you go. All right. Well, look, this is great. Sounds like a fun weekend. Again, it's July 20, 21, 22, $10 a day, right?
Yep.
Yeah, you can't beat that. And I personally don't care much about food, but Norm Plord wanted me to ask you what your potluck supper is going to be like.
Well, that was great last year. We had a wide variety of stuff, everything from baked beans to Portuguese soup and all sorts of baked goods and things like that. And the kitchen's open during the day. Our guys will be cooking pulled pork meals and of course, our famed hot dogs. We're known for our hot dogs.
No chili?
What? No chili?
No chili.
Norm is...
Well, generally speaking, we have chili available for the hot dogs, too. So,
Well, yeah. I like that pulled pork. I like that.
That's
great.
Great.
Okay, well, appreciate you being on the show tonight, Larry, and best of luck to you with your primitive, what is it called, the Puckerbrush?
Puckerbrush Primitive Gathering.
Yeah, Puckerbrush Primitive Gathering. Okay, good luck to you.
Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Okay, Larry, thanks for being on the show.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. All right, that sounds like a good time. Yeah. Okay, back to our guest tonight. And again, don't be bashful. If you have a question for these two bush flyers, we welcome your calls. And what's the number, co-host?
It's 1-800-966-1039.
Okay, before the break, I asked Jake to tell us what his scariest flying event was, and he was talking about the airplane that caught on fire when he had passengers on board, but everything turned out all right. What about you, Scott? Whatever, Scotty Bates, what happened to you?
Well, when I was flying for Dick, probably my scariest thing happened at Johnson Pond. Going out of Johnston Pond, it's a real small pond and an island in the middle. And I was going out with the Beaver with a load of people. And when I went by the island, I was off the water and hit a downdraft. And all of a sudden, I'm right down below these 80-foot trees.
That's not fun.
No. Luckily, I had a Beaver under me. And it had lots of power, and I went right to the limit. I didn't go over it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And we pulled out, but on the way out, the floats were right in the trees.
Oh,
that still scares me to this day.
Oh, yeah. Probably had shaky knees.
I sure did.
Yeah, you don't want that to happen. That's part of the challenge, isn't it, I would imagine? You get a float plane in one of those little places on a hot day and there's not enough wind. You got to try to decide whether it's safe, right? To get out?
It can definitely be a challenge. And, of course, like Scotty was saying, you don't know what's coming in terms of downdrafts or momentary. But one thing that Dick was really good about, when we got really ugly, hot, swirly weather, quite often he'd say, take the next larger size plane for the trip, so you'd have reserve power. So he's very safety conscious that way. That cost him some money, but that's a lot better than have to deal with a busted plane.
You bet. So he was very safety conscious, obviously.
He definitely was.
He wasn't afraid to spend money if he thought it was going to be safer.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to have to make a buck here in just a minute. Have I got a couple of minutes before commercial time?
No, about one and a half.
A couple of minutes? Okay. Yeah. Your new book that we're talking about today is called Dick Folsom, Bush Pilot, A Legend Reflects. I read the book probably a month ago, and then I reviewed it again this afternoon just briefly. And there's a couple of chapters in there that I just enjoyed so much. Any part of the particular part of this book was you sat Dick down and talked to him. Tell us about that.
Well, I'd heard these stories before over coffee breaks because I remained friendly with Dick after I worked for him. And I finally convinced him that we really ought to record it. So we got two old tape recorders, and I had a gutted farmhouse at the time with a barrel stove and two chairs. And we sat in there, and I would prompt Dick because I'd heard the stories before. And he was great telling them. Once you got him started, he could just keep going. So then essentially we picked topics, airplane crashes, World War II, so forth, and he just would go stream of consciousness talking about the things he remembered.
And you had no trouble? He didn't clam up on you? He was happy to talk about
it? Easiest talking guy in the world. Yeah. He kept his sense of humor through the whole thing, giggling.
Yeah. What I like about the book is that it is pretty much verbatim. What he said to you, right?
It is completely verbatim. And in fact, we kept all the colloquial grammar and that kind of thing just to make it seem real.
Yeah, yeah. Any particular part of the interview that you enjoyed the most in the different sections of the book here?
I thought some of the best of his stories were the significant events that were seared in his mind. The things that had happened that he'd never forget, such as going through the ice at Forest Park on New Year's or Christmas Eve.
Yeah. And there's also a chapter in here called, I think it's, let's see, Close Calls was the name of it, right? You had an interview with another bush flyer from New Hampshire named George Grinnell. And tell us, now, did you go and talk to George to get these? Or did you have Dick tell the story?
I knew George well. He visited Greenville constantly, plus I visited his home on several occasions. So I knew the stories, but Dick reviewed them on the tape. And George is sort of legendary in that I think the number 7 for the planes he wrecked over his career. And when I say wrecked, I don't mean dinged slightly. I mean demolished. So he kept his sense of humor about it, and he actually had a movie clipped together of all his airplane crashes that he loved to show people.
So he escaped the Grim Reaper 7 times then, right?
He did. He was hospitalized on more than one occasion, but he survived.
Yeah. Recount for our listeners.
That was George, not Dick.
You're talking about George?
Yes.
Okay. Let's recount for our listeners one of George's crashes. He put I think it was a Cessna 185, was it, into the trees, 182? Was that the one where there was a fire and he was drenched with gasoline?
Yeah, I think that was an Aranca sedan.
Okay.
And it was in the top of a maple tree, and they tried to get out of a pond and didn't make it, ended up in the tree, and George was soaked in gas. His passenger was hurt. They got George to the ground, took him to the hospital, and gasoline, especially aviation gasoline, burns your skin. So he was on fire, and
he wasn't actually in flames, but
his skin was burning up.
Yeah.
And they start asking him insurance questions.
This is at the hospital?
This is at the hospital. Yeah. So George just starts ripping his clothes off in the lobby, and they very quickly found him a private room.
All right, that's funny. Did Dick Folsom ever have any close calls?
Yeah, I would say he did. But the thing is, for instance, when the plane fell through the ice at Forest Park, he survived that okay, but it's 20 below zero. Once the plane goes through the ice, you don't know if the ice is going to hold you when you get out of it. And in those conditions, if he'd gone through the ice himself, he'd be done.
Oh, yeah.
No one's going to get him.
Right.
And then they still had to get to shore. They got a fire started, but by the time they got to shore, their clothes were all froze, so they could barely move. And that means your fingers will hardly work to light a match. So a lot of that stuff is, it's more serious than it sounds like when you just read the story.
Yeah, you can look back now, I suppose, and kind of laugh about it, but at the moment, it's not very funny.
That's right.
Yeah. How long did you fly for Dick Folsom?
I flew three different summers for Dick.
Three different summers,
I flew one summer, and then I took a winter off, and then I worked for him for two summers after that.
You both flew the Beaver, right?
Oh, yes.
Did.
Yeah. I had a chance to ride in one of those when I worked for an outfitter up in Labrador. My wife and I went back and forth in Beavers, and it was sort of like being in a flying dump truck, I thought. Is that a erroneous characterization?
Yeah, it's by far the best designed bush plane that was ever created.
Yeah. Why is it such a good bush plane?
Because it'll haul so much weight, fly slowly, has all the right attributes, and it was designed as a bush plane. All these other planes weren't really designed as a bush plane. But when Dick actually knew the designer of the Beaver well, and they questioned all the Canadian bush pilots about what they wanted in a bush plane, and they developed a plane that would do what they wanted to do and do it spectacularly.
Are they still making the Beaver?
No.
They haven't? They went out of business? Or?
No, they just discontinued it.
But they have them around today still, obviously.
They have actually more and more of them because they're rebuilding them at several places in the country. They're taking the old carcasses and completely refurbishing
them.
Are
they, yeah. They must have hold their value, I would think.
They're very expensive
now.
Yeah,
I bet, yeah. Okay, we're going to take a short break here, Jake, to earn a buck, and we'll continue talking about bush flying. If you have questions, and we encourage you, don't be bashful. These gents would be glad to answer any questions you have. And what's the number, Scotty?
1-800-966-1039.
And we'd like to remind you, as we do every week about this time, that this program is sponsored in part by General Appliance and Brewer, the place to go for all of your camp appliance needs. They have a complete line of both new and used gas ranges, refrigerators, freezers, and, of course, the top-of-the-line compost toilet.
Ride the wave, baby.
Boy, you guys do that so well. Anyway, General Appliance at 91 Center Street in Brewer. Al Elkin is he's the honcho over there. He's the fellow to talk with. He knows his stuff. He's been doing this for years. A great fellow to do business with. His prices are fair. He stands behind everything he sells, installs and services everything he sells. If you're in the market for a used or new appliance, it would benefit you to make contact with Al Elkin over there at General Appliance. I don't think you'll be sorry you did. He's a fair man and really knows his stuff. The telephone number there, if you want to give him a buzz, if you have a question about what he might have available, you can call Al at 989-3714, 989-3714, or you can visit him at 91 Center Street in Brewer. And if Bob Lehman was here, he'd tell you how to get there. But you just go across the bridge, take a right and a left, and he owns half the block there, right?
Right. One of the things he does have that I really like is these new gas lights. They're so much better than the old kind.
They have improved their market, haven't they?
Yeah, and they just throw so much more light, and they don't smoke as much, and they just...
And when you light them, the flame doesn't stick out of the copper pipe anymore. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, General Appliance and Brewer. Keep in mind next time you're looking for a new or used appliance. And again, our guests, if you're just joining us, are Jake Morrill, who's written one book, two books, and he's working on a third. The book we're discussing is about the iconic bush pilot and I guess you'd call him a fixed base operator, right? Wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Up there in Greenville, Dick Folsom, who we lost a number of years ago.
Yes.
Right? And this book is an interview with Dick. And you've really, it's good that you're doing this for a lot of reasons, but you know what I like? The idea is so much is lost in our legacy and our history. When these people die, it's gone. And it's nice to have this for the future. It's just great. If somebody wants to get a copy of your book, how would they go about that, Jake?
You can just go on my website, which is hardscrabblelodge.com. and just follow the instructions. All the books are reviewed. The pictures from the books are on the website and instructions on how to buy.
All right. Tell us a little bit now about your other book that you're working on. We'll probably get a chance to talk again about that, but just give us a little insight into what you're about to do, would you?
Okay. In March, I spent a weekend with Gary Dumont, who's a retired game warden, and we recorded his answers to questions similar to the ones I asked Dick, mostly about what it's like to be a flying warden and the stories he remembered from his mentors, who would be George Lader, Mac Mayhew, and Andy Stinson. Those three hired on right after World War II. Gary overlapped them by about 3 years, and Gary flew 20,000 hours, which is,
wow,
that's a tremendous amount of time.
Yeah, that is a lot of hours.
So he just had a great memory, and he had great stories of what they did every day as a warden, plus what he remembered that Mac had told him or Andy. And the other great thing is he had Mac's slide collection, and it turned out that Mac was an amateur photographer. So we had hundreds of slides from the 1950s of warden activities, including plane crashes and everything else. So we included about 20 of those in the book, and the rest of it is a transcription of all that Gary said. It's hours and hours of conversation transcribed.
Okay, and as you say, Gary was well known too in the warden service. When you were flying, Scotty, for Folsom's Flying Service, were you ever asked to do anything that was against your better judgment?
No.
Never?
No. Sometimes you might get pressure from the sports themselves that want to be flown in bad weather, but not from Dick. You know, when you made a decision, he stood behind you.
He did you, yeah. That's good. That's important, isn't it?
But lots of times you get pressure from the people waiting to be flown into somewhere, and during bad weather, and as the day went on, they would get
more antsy, right?
Right, yeah. And get more.
I remember one Memorial Day, the weather was terrible. We had 120 people to move, and the bottom line was they weren't going to get moved, all of them. But we had several that were obnoxious, and Dick was in the office, and one guy kept badgering him, "When are we going to go? When are we going to go?" Dick took his car keys and he tossed them to the guy. He says, "The plane's out there. Fire it up."
Yeah, go for it. Yeah. I suspected that would probably be the answer you'd give. I mean, Dick's not going to ask you to do anything that he wouldn't do, obviously, and he wouldn't do anything that was not safe. But you do. There are people who don't understand the considerations, and they just want to get there because they're living a busy, hectic life.
One thing he encouraged us to do, which really works, in good weather, he wanted us to fly the routes low, because the perspective when you fly low, say up the Penobscot or something like that, is totally different than if you're 1,000 feet high.
Oh, yeah.
So then when you're really flying underneath a couple hundred feet of clouds, you've done it many times before. It's just that the clouds are there now.
Okay.
So you know the picture you're going to be looking at, and you know when the lefts and rights come up.
Yep. Yeah.
And once you do that forever, like Charlie Coe could, you can really fly, because of all the water, in pretty marginal conditions with water underneath you.
Yeah.
But you're not necessarily, in fact, you're not flying a straight line. You're just going with the contours and with the water bodies.
Yeah. You know, that was one of the things when I first started flying was in small planes low. It's remarkable, and I bet you'll agree with it, it's remarkable the watershed that Maine has when you get from Moosehead Lake north. Isn't it incredible?
Yeah, and you can follow all these different river systems and go just about anywhere and never get more than 100 feet off the water.
Yeah. So that was good training for you, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You mentioned Charlie Coe. Now, when I worked there, he probably gave me more help and more pointers because he flew, you know, I flew side by side with him there for a while, and he was the most help as far as becoming a bush pilot of anybody that I know of. I really respected Charlie.
Yeah, Charlie had a lot of experience. He flew P-51s out of England in the war.
Oh, did he? Yeah.
But he wore shooter's glasses in terrible weather.
Yeah.
And it enabled him to see better in fog.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Wow. So, okay, this book is available, and it's an interview with Dick Folsom. Now, I recall when I received the book, I think there was a CD with it as well, right?
Yes, the CDs are of the original conversation, but we sent them to California, and they remastered them so that the static of the old tape recorder was removed.
Okay, that comes with the book, right?
It does.
Okay. We have a caller. Let's take a call. Good evening, caller. You're on Main Outdoors with the bush pilot and author Jake Morrow. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. Hello, Jake.
Hi.
I just have one question. Did they ever use Dick Folsom's plane in any movies in Hollywood or for any movies? I could have sworn I saw that plane in a couple movies before, maybe down Bayou Country or in North Carolina or maybe even in Maine. But just touch base on that.
All right. When I was around there, they didn't, but I'm not saying that they might not have after. I think there was one B-grade movie that was made on Moosehead Lake that perhaps has that beaver. What I do remember is that Marlboro Cigarettes hired that beaver to go to Venezuela for a cigarette commercial.
Right. No kidding.
And they took it down there, and it ran only in Europe, but there's a picture of that beaver on a sand beach. And it's the Marlboro man, and they left the oil on the beaver, and he's supposedly fixing it, and he's got a cigarette in his mouth.
Oh yeah, yeah. While he's fixing the carburetor, right? Yeah.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Okay, what's your first name, sir?
My name is Bob.
Where are you calling from, Bob?
I'm calling from Addison.
All right, good to hear you. Good to hear your voice, and we appreciate you listening. And thanks for the call.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen.
All right, thank you. Do we have another caller, Mr. Engineer?
No, we don't.
Okay, how much time we have left here?
You're down to about 1 minute.
About 1 minute. Okay, and your other book is coming out in about a couple of months, do you say?
No, it's probably 2 to 3 weeks right now. It's at the printers being printed.
Oh, okay, so a couple of weeks will be out. Now, if somebody wants that book about Gary Dumond, how do they get it? Same thing.
Go to the website. It's not up yet because you can't buy it, but just as soon as it's available, it'll be on the website, hardscrabblelodge.com.
Hardscrabblelodge.com. Is that all one word?
It is.
And all lowercase?
Yes.
Hardscrabblelodge.com if you want to pick up any of Jake's books.
And the title of this book is what now?
The title of the book, go ahead, what's the title of the book?
It's Gary Dumond Remembers Maine Warden Pilots.
How about the book you've got in the studio right now?
Okay, the name of this is Dick Folsom, Bush Pilot, A Legend Reflects.
Okay, good.
Alrighty? Okay.
Because somebody had asked that, that's why I wanted to put it over there.
Yeah.
Those books are also on Amazon. I mean, you can find them in a lot of places.
Okay. And are you still aviating, are you?
I am. I have a 1942 Aronca Super Chief float plane.
Okay. And how's that run for you, all right?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, yeah. And now it's a lot more relaxing to do it yourself without taking passengers.
Yeah,
like
I go up about 500 feet, and I do circles and come back.
Well, there you go. Bore holes in the sky, as it were. Thank you for coming, Jake. We appreciate it. We'll have you back.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. And thank you, Scotty. Did a great job. And our guest next week is going to be a tick expert. Jim Dill will be us to talk about ticks right here on Maine Outdoors.